Is that better?
Yeah.
Hey. And they said, let there be sound. Welcome to the Svision hosted session. We're very glad to have you guys here. We are a sponsor for the first time at SCU. So we thought we would come in with a big bang. So that means we're not coming in with ourselves. We're bringing a full armed team with us. As you can see, there are much more intelligent people in the room than myself here. So I wasn't talking about you guys, don't worry. So I'd just like to do a little bit of a thank you and an introduction of what Svision is for those of you who don't know us. And then I will hand it over to our very capable partner, flown in all the way from Sweden, Gothenburg, goes by the name of Jonas Lenten, works for a company called Approved, but more about that shortly. Svision has been in the business of working as a Microsoft ISV on various levels, gold, silver, platinum, whatever they're calling it these days, for the last 8 years. For those of you who know Svision before, and a lot of the older gentlemen in the room, is that better? Less intelligent, older, will remember us from our dashboarding tool, Live Maps. That started out 7 years ago where we were basically the only dashboarding solution on the market outside of Visio. Speed the clock forward 6.5 years. We have now decided to take the brave new step into a different sort of look at what System Center should be, basically because we got bored of doing dashboards. Svision has a product called Live Maps Unity, which is for those of you keeping track, version 7 of Live Maps. It has now gone into the unknown, uncharted world of business service management. So if you talk from anyone from marketing, that is what our tool does. If you talk from anyone from IT, it's a lot more, as the guys are going to have a long, in-depth discussion about ITIL, and I'm sure our solution will be raised up in there for everyone to know. What we are attempting to do with Svision is break out into the world of ITIL management, not only in System Center, but in IT as a whole. So there are going to be a lot of comments and notes that you'll see in the next coming email blasts from our marketing team about where we're going to head on our roadmap and some exciting stuff. Just to take it back at the moment, we have Live Maps Unity, which has just recently been released onto HTML5, and with Live Maps 7.5 coming out in October, we're looking at doing a lot more, including being able to do SLA monitoring and reporting, as well as alerting from System Center. Live Maps Unity 8 will come out before the end of the year as well, and that will be a full overhaul of the suite, and then Live Maps VNext will be coming out with a new step over to SolarWinds, so that we can start doing proper business service management. We also have another tool out there called Cloud Reporter, which is going to combine very neatly into Live Maps Unity version 8 and give you the ability to forecast and measure your virtualized platform versus services. But enough about that. I know you guys came here for the real gentlemen on the chair and to listen to their thoughts. So my lovely assistant, if you could switch it over. Just like to do a little bit of a background story about where Svision's coming from. So we work obviously with Jonas. We asked him as an independent partner to say to us, who do you want to put in a room and get to talk about ITIL? Some strange reason he picked you guys. We don't know why. He's going to be leading a session. He's worked with Svision for, did I get that right? Past 3 years? 3-4 years now? Yeah. Yeah, so we've been with him in bed, if you'd like to use that terminology, for quite a while. He's worked with us on quite a few markets, and you know, he's helped our development team come and look at a few interesting ways of how ITIL should be managed, along with a lot of MVPs. The cool thing with him is we can get him to be quiet occasionally when he's on projects. Driven by common understanding of BSM from a System Center perspective, so obviously one of the driving factors when we decided to stop doing dashboards is to move into BSM. Business service management, and thanks to a lot of the thoughts of the community and our customers worldwide, the 700 plus we keep on getting on the phone, we are driving a different perspective of where we go with service management. Jonas has helped and improve us. Hey, I haven't finished the last one.
Just speaking so slow.
Okay. So Jonas helps us a lot about a message. He wants other people to talk. So I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you.
I was going to talk about them.
Yeah, but I will do the introduction. Because So with us today, we have Thomas, Christian, Robert, and Kevin, all Microsoft MVPs, who is going to help us answer some of the questions that might appear here and also to share some of your experience. If you have any questions, please feel free to raise your hands. Otherwise, you can send emails to info@cevision.com. And Justin here, we're going to pick them up in the end of the session. But otherwise, just raise your hands and we'll try to answer as many as we can. So, as Justin said, my name is Jonas Lentun. I work for a company called Approved in Sweden. We work with the System Center platform, but not only with the technology, but also to improve and help organization with the adoption to ITIL with the Microsoft as a platform. So we have some interesting topics that we're going to try and go through this session. And as I mentioned before, we have some lovely MVPs who's going to be assisting me with some of their experiences. So ITIL, or the IT Infrastructure Library, is the most recognized framework in the world for IT service management. And the main benefits you get by implementing ITIL is to ensure quality control and efficiency of the delivery of your IT services. There is a lot of benefits with doing it, but this is the biggest reasons why you should start looking at it. How many of you in here are working in accordance to ITIL or looking into it right now?
Or attempting it.
Attempting. So what does it mean? In a traditional way, when we look to how IT was managed before, we were doing a lot of focus on ensuring that devices, servers, and applications was up and running. And in case of a failure, it was hard to understand what the impact of the business was. So when we design our services and put all these companies together into one perspective, we can get a clear view of which processes and customers are being affected in case of a failure. This aligns IT with the business, so we speak the same language. And this is something that Robert mentioned before. It's really about understanding the business, because that's the reason why IT are there, to support the business processes they deliver. So in the modern world, a lot of people now looking into the cloud-based delivery. And there's some design concerns that you need to think about. Actually, the cloud from today actually comes from yesterday's mainframe environments. The big difference is the internet, actually. It provides a pay-as-you-go or utility-based pricing. It's or can be globally serviced from cloud service providers' data centers. And it's really changing how IT is delivered, both for consumers and service providers. It's moving organizations away from the traditional software licensing models. And even though the cloud is something new, it actually doesn't change the way IT is being delivered according to ITIL. I know that some of you may have some thinking about how you should design or set up cloud-based in accordance to ITIL when it comes to... Sorry, the microphone.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, the first experience regarding... Or do you want to take this one?
No.
Oh, wow. Thank you. So the first thing regarding starting with ITIL is, of course, don't do it all in the same time, right? Don't rush into an ITIL project. Start small. And if you're going to, you know, say that, oh, you are the change manager. Just don't give him the role, give him the concept of being the change manager also, so he doesn't just have a fancy title on his business card. So strategy, build up the vision, provide Agile smart, meaning start small. Yep. A lot of people just rush into it.
Yes, that's correct.
Any other thoughts?
I have one. So, no, it's all good. My advice would be, so I'm an ops manager guy mainly, but whole idea of getting the most value out of ops manager is to model your IT services in the same way that your end users can consume them, okay? So if you say, take any given service in your organization, let's just take email, right? It's a clever thing, whether your business is fully following ITIL or at least, you know, rolling along those lines or thinking, you know, ITIL thoughts, it's a really good thing if you can get all of the stakeholders for that service or any given service within your business to sit around in a room or have some proper meetings and understand all of the components and all of the endpoints of each service that you want to manage within your environment, whether it's from a monitoring perspective or whether it's from a change perspective. You know, it's really, really important that you or your customers understand, firstly, what's in your service catalog. How many services do you have? How many do the business have? What are the responsibilities back to the business? And then work all that out. Agree things like SLAs, agree things like change. And then when you've all that done, map it out properly. Don't just talk about it. So that's first and foremost. Normally when we engage with customers and we're talking ops manager, you know, be surprised at the high percentage of customers that don't know. They know they've got maybe 5 to 10 core services, and then they know, hey, Joe down the back there has some Linux server sitting under his desk that does something. But we know if we turn that off, then the air conditioning stops working. So like, no one has a clue. So it really, really helps to get an understanding of that, because when you understand it, you can manage it. When you can manage it, you can report on it. And if you can report on it, you can go back to your boss and say, hey, I'm looking for a pay rise because your service is available over the past year. It's never gone down. Or you can go back and say, hey, I want more budget because I can prove to you why this service has been up and down. So that's my 10 cents.
Yeah, we notice a lot of times when people actually start looking into the design phase that these groups of people who's sitting down designing the services, the service portfolio, and the service catalog, they actually don't work so much with the technology. So when they try and implement those design concepts, the technology really doesn't support how they are thinking. So I think it's really important as well to sit down everybody who's going to work with this, not only the management or the process owners, to sit and discuss, well, this is how we're going to deal with the naming convention and so on. Bring everybody in, and hopefully you will get it right from the beginning.
Just one more thing is, it's very important also that you guys are focusing on the actual business need and don't let the technology push the business need. Let the business push the need for the different technology that you should adopt and use within your like ITIL processes or business continuity plan. Start from the beginning and do it right.
Yeah, and it's also hard to keep up a project to say that we need to bring in everything at once. Just start with a couple of services and try to work with that, try to learn from that. Then, when you have learned, working with more and more services. Of course, it's really hard to say, yeah, how much time is this project going to take? But let's say that you set the time limit for the project, say, as long as we get within this time span, it's how long we actually get. And then reevaluate or bring in more services. So even when more and more organizations are looking into the cloud-based delivery, there are some really good benefits. Of course, it gives you the possibility to reduce the IT overcapacity that you have in your own data center. Because a lot of times, these data centers, they're not running at least 5-10%. And also that you have the resource scalability, so you can get your resources up and down as needed when you need it, instead of having servers standing there just in case of. It also provides the utility-based charging. it increases the capabilities to the IT organization because you don't have to have in-house deep knowledge about everything. You can actually buy this as a service that gives you a lot of possibilities for implementing new technologies. Do you see any other clear benefits when going and moving to the cloud-based delivery? Because we have two MVPs here who's working with it, so hopefully they have seen some other benefits.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, one thing I can see is that it's a point on there, bringing capabilities to the IT organizations. Most of the people which do know me, they know that I'm a Fabric guy, so I work mostly as an infrastructure consultant. And I can't believe how much time people are spending on infrastructure, right? Which don't bring any values at the end. It's just the services bring the value, not really the fabric or the underlying part. So what I can see is a huge problem we're facing now, or a lot of companies are facing, and it's called shadowed IT. So that's a huge problem right now, because a lot of consumers, they know about how easy it is to buy cloud services. They probably just order it. Like if you look at Dropbox, for example, a perfect example, consumers are using it, or OneDrive, Skype, all that kind of stuff. They're getting used to that model, right? And a lot of IT organizations just can't keep up with that speed. And they're like, okay, before you ever going to have that, we need to buy new servers or things and get things in place, and that takes for ages. And business just doesn't work that way, right? So there's the point where cloud-based delivery really can help you speed up things and make it bring more value for the business, right?
Yeah, this is exactly what Thomas is talking about, is actually the risks of the cloud-based delivery, that you if you don't keep up with the organization's needs, you actually risk and lose the control of the procurement of your services. Because if you can't provide it, they will probably go and buy it somewhere else. And I promise you, the day that it doesn't work, they will probably come running to you and ask why it's not working. Another thing with the risk is that if you keep your services on-premise, you get better control of the lifecycle management, because even though the products go out of support, you can still maintain them in-house. When going through a cloud service provider, they will probably manage the whole lifecycle of the service itself, and you hardly have something to say when they are going to do a change. So it's easier to have it in-house, so you can influence when changes can be made to the service for the least impact to your business. Of course, there's a lot of security concerns. Even though the cloud is really secure today, or?
I would say the cloud is more secure than perhaps our data centers.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the bodyguards and stuff like that. But back to Thomas' point about shadow IT. I work a lot with cloud computing, and I see very often that ITIL has become an obstacle to organizations. Too much bureaucracy. So the IT department are sort of relaxing a bit behind the ITIL wall. So because right now what's happening in industry is that there comes a generation of new users, new professionals, new developers. They have sort of grown up with the internet. They know what to do. They know what to expect. They don't need to be watched out like our generation. Can we say that? Or at least...
What is our generation?
I've seen people leaving the company due to ITIL, actually. And it's sort of really a challenge to in the cloud area, to get the continuous delivery and deployment to fit into ITIL. So I'm just curious, in this room, is there anyone who has a different approach than ITIL, like Scrum or something like that? No one.
No. This is pro-ITIL people.
I'm just curious. Because
one brave soul stuck
ITIL their hand is up. Very good for more like static enterprise solutions. There's a lot of that today already, but I work a lot with service providers, and they need to sort of changed more drastic than other organizations. So, yeah.
But I can totally follow what you say, because a lot of the customers that we are talking to, they are trying to somehow avoid ISO because it's such a huge thing, you know. So they're not doing Scrum or anything, they just don't.
That's common. That's not just probably related to the subset of customers that you have. That's common pretty much for most people I talk to, most customers. My percentage.
I also think that in every religion, you have those fanatics. That's things that, okay, if you want to work with ITIL, you're going to go everything. So it's still a recommendation. It's a framework that you can just choose what you like. But everywhere you see people that you have to use the whole framework. It's just the best practice. So, but I agree. But what are the other options, as you said? We have Scrum. Is that an option? We have ITIL.
Or no option whatsoever, as mentioned. No.
Are you pointing to Andreas?
It works. Call me when it doesn't.
Yeah.
What's interesting, I just wanted to jump in there. I'm good. So a lot of the consultations and installations that we do with a lot of our customers when we start opening up a little bit of ITIL, because we work with a few ITIL tasks, not all of them. Civision doesn't claim to do all of that stuff. But when we bring a bit of visibility to the monitoring platform, all of a sudden we get from the monitoring teams, a lot of people suddenly don't realize, in your point there is that, you know, when you go Azure or you go all of that stuff, it's not hard to replace the fabric. It's not hard to keep that running. It's in ITIL, and I might be stepping out of my boundaries, it's not necessarily about monitoring the infrastructure part anymore, because how long does it take you to replace a disk these days, or a hard drive, or a computer? But the realization with ITIL, which is what scares a lot of people, is you suddenly have to elevate to becoming a service delivery. And all of a sudden, you are responsible to the business for delivering the service. What makes up that service doesn't matter, because to be honest, parts come and go, vendors come and go, Azure, AWS, doesn't matter. There's going to be really cheap contracts out there. They're going to provide it. Getting your Exchange service to work these days is great, but being able to prove to the company that you've delivered a service, as soon as you make that selection, then it's about delivering a service. And Jonas made a very good point, is in the end, you're competing against everyone in the world as an IT department. Because if you can't deliver a service, then there's another company that can. And companies don't care where the infrastructure is. A lot of companies I talk to actually like the fact they don't have to maintain their own data centers. They don't have to hire security guards for it.
Yeah, well, they didn't even care when they hosted it by themselves. They can just say, hey, I bought an application.
That's it.
But, we don't have that support. Buy it.
So to come back, I think the biggest struggle is to decide whether to be an infrastructure company or an infrastructure-based team when it comes to ITIL, or actually start looking at the end goals of ITIL, which is delivering services. That's my two cents as well.
Also, one thing that would be interesting to see how you see the monitoring capabilities, because one of the benefits of going with another service provider is that, they take care of everything, so I don't have to care. In my opinion, I think it's really good to still have a holistic view of the services that you have or provide into your business, even though it's another service provider. I met a lot of customers just say, they keep track on everything. We get a report every month, and but that's out of their perspective. And that's hardly the case for the business. So we're actually trying to at least focus on getting in what are the experiences from the business or the end users on how that service is being delivered, even if it's in cloud or internally. Of course, it means that you don't have to monitor as much if you have it in the cloud or as an infrastructure service. So I would like to talk a little bit about SLAs. A lot of times we come into companies and we ask them, do you have written SLAs against your customers? Yeah, we have. Okay, what's in the SLAs? Yeah, it's 99% uptime. Okay. And, that's really hard to understand. But if you look into the service that you provide, what are we monitoring everything in the whole service? Or we have to put up like 500 monitors, because it says that the whole service needs to be up at 99%. and only an app. They don't care about the performance, which is also a really big thing to consider if the service is running within SLA. So we actually try to have the discussions with the customers to see what is the main purpose of this service. Because every service has some purpose. That's the reason why they are there. So we focus on, okay, it has a lot of features, this service, but what is the purpose? And then try to catch those and then bring in them into the SLAs. So it's not only the uptime that is really important. And also when we do modeling of the services, like with the Savision tools, you have the possibility to bring in end-user experience, you can have the infrastructure experience, and also the application experience. But what is important for the customer? What do you actually want to report SLA on? Because if you bring in a solution like the Savision Limeapps, it will automatically roll up the health of the whole service, even if it's a server that's in. So we try to promote that you focus on the end user perspective, the functional testing or the synthetic transactions for the service itself. The other things is more for troubleshooting, try to prevent service outages, and also to support the other processes. When you talk to Microsoft and try to get their opinion, they say, keep the fabric out of it. I'm not sure how you see on that. Should we keep the fabric out of the monitoring solution when working with, example, Operation Manager, Service Manager, and so on? I know you're working a lot with Operation Manager, Kevin.
I wouldn't say it's set in stone that you keep the fabric out of everything. Again, that's back down to planning, getting agreement from the business. You know, what I find is most C-level managers, they want to see a dashboard that shows all green lights. And if you start from there and say, okay, well, what do those green lights represent? Well, this represents my AD, my email, my Oracle, or whatever the line of business services are. Then you have the conversation with all the people around the room, maybe pull out Visio, PowerPoint, or something, and try and map out that service manually first, and then understand how deep do we go. Do we do a client perspective, which is a great idea, but that can have its own separate SLA or SLO, as you mentioned earlier, from a performance perspective. Or if it's from an availability perspective, you know, do you just want to see the components that are relevant to that service? So maybe the Oracle databases, the Oracle instances, the clusters, but we don't go to the ESX hosts or the Hyper-V hosts. Maybe that's a service on its own. Maybe it's a different team that manages it. So it really, there's no one shoe fits all, forget about the fabric, unless it's up in public cloud and someone else is looking after it.
Yeah.
But absolutely, don't go too deep making a service that's super complex that will always represent a red health state, for example.
Yeah.
That's useless then.
Yeah. And we had a lot of discussions with this because there are another perspective where you actually want to use those configuration items like Windows Server, the ESX host, and so on in the change management process. And then it's really good to have those related into the service. So, as I'm going to show later on, you can have a relationship. So when you hit the change, which services are affected? If that item is not in the service, you will not have that relationship. So that's some discussion you need to take and understand, okay, if we don't have those needs for the business to work with that, yeah, maybe then we can leave it out. If we want to work with that for a change perspective, yeah, maybe we could add them, but we disable the roll-up. So we don't care, actually, if the infrastructure goes red, it doesn't affect the service. So it's all about what are we going to use it for. Also, if you look into the reports in Operation Manager, if you only focus on Operation Manager, it's mostly about uptime, right? Did we deliver the right uptime for the service? But another key thing is to look into the number of service failures as well. That is also something that is a really good idea to include in your service level agreement, because if you have flapping services that goes up and down, that could be even worse than to have 1 hour downtime.
Yeah.
Just one thing regarding SLAs. SLA is a good thing, right? We love SLAs. Or do we? Yeah. Of course you do. Yeah, but the thing is, but I see very often in the field that people are, you know, looking at the, you know, the technical perspective. They want to have a solution that will just like have a Jesus experience or whatever, just solve everything. And come on, that's not reality, right? You need to sit down and, as we talked about, map up the services, you know, the data dependencies, how they interact with another. And as Jonas said, do we have different services that are relying on one another? And how should we design that service level agreement? Should we have an underpinning contract, perhaps, for a host or whatever? So it is really important, and I do want to emphasize that, keep it scenario-driven solutions, right? And build the strategy and the vision from that you map into your service level agreement. That is of key of essence. And also, always keep it simple, right? Start small. Don't add complexity. There are so many designs that I have met during my year in the field that is way too complex. Why? Why do you do it complex? You met that scene that also, right?
Yeah.
I'll
speak on that.
Yeah. You have to wait.
You have to rip it
off. So don't add complexity. Why do you want to do that? One of five pillars in the business continuity plan is not add complexity. Keep it simple. Start small. And from that, grow the service. But start small.
Where, before, obviously, the microphone gets handled, where do you think the complexity comes from?
Complexity comes from...
Management consultants.
Complexity comes from having a technology-driven mindset, right? We purchase technology. We purchase software. We purchase solutions that we think we can just rely on. But guess what? That doesn't work. Because if you guys want to be cloud adaptive, meaning that you want to, you know, map the service into the service that you provide within your data center, regardless of public, hybrid, private cloud, I don't care, you need to sit down and understand the data dependencies, all that stuff. How and what level, as you were mentioning, Kev, what level do we need to have in the service mapping? What kind of relationships and all that? You need to sort that out. Otherwise, you don't have a good starting point.
But it's still very technology driven, you know, because you have all these features in the technology, you have to use it. And you paid for it, right?
Yeah.
So of course you need to implement it. Every management pack for Operation Manager is free, so I have to import everything at once. And there's a good example of where the shit hits the fan, right? So yeah. Keep it simple. Try to understand what the benefits are for your organizations. I think that's a really key concept of getting this to work.
Can I dip in with just a real-world example? Just to hit this home, if you're thinking about designing services, I'll give you a real-world example. A couple of years ago, Microsoft Ireland, I'm based in Dublin, Microsoft Ireland came to the company I work for to say, listen, can you guys call out to this customer? It's a fairly large global insurance company who had either a HQ or a fairly large office in Ireland. And basically, they had engaged with a different partner previously and got some funding from Microsoft to deploy Ops Manager across the organization, okay? And then Microsoft went back to the customer, you know, a few months or a year later, hey, how's System Center going for you? The customer said, useless, hate it, don't use it anymore. Microsoft are like, whoa, this is worth a lot of licensing to us. We can't let this go. We got to see why they find out it's useless. So I rolled in, had a quick look, had a talk to the customer first, the ops manager administrator, and said, look, before I even look at this, what's your challenges? Console keeps crashing, everything's so slow. Okay, let's have a look. Straight into distributed applications. I saw they didn't have a huge number of them, probably 100 or something. And I said, give me an example of one. And he goes to click on one. I can't recall what it was called, but it was some line of business service that, you know, on the surface of it, it looked like they'd mapped out their service catalog properly. When he opened it, sure enough, the console crashed. I had to open up in edit mode, and I saw that it had approximately 64,500 objects in that service.
That service was named IT.
You would think so, but it wasn't. It was a pretty large company, but some bright spark. And this wasn't just a consultant coming in. This was with conversations with the customer. So if you just assume this is a dashboard with health state, somebody said, okay, I want a dot up there that represents such and such a service. Okay, so they went out, and they must have taken weeks to work out every single component of that service and put it in. And the problem was, even if there wasn't performance issues, that would always be read. There's always something. And then people just forget about it. So you're absolutely right. Don't make it too complex. That's a real world example I use all the time. And when I explain to the customer, hey, look, why don't we take it, you know, layer your application based on which teams need to react to which areas of it going down. Surely there's not one guy or two people sitting in a NOC that's looking at this that know everything about that whole service. There's going to be different skill sets within the service. So let's build out different services or subservices. So real world.
Should we move on? We are like on slide 5 out of 80.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, and the last thing is that actually when delivering a good reporting solution, it's also really interesting to see how many incidents is related to the surface. Because when we use, for example, operation manager and forward things as incidents over to service manager, we only get the automatic things that's being monitored. How do we know that the monitoring is working as it should be? Maybe we just don't have enough monitoring, or we do have too much. So also catch the manual incidents that's being created from users. So a short story about the CMDB. The CMDB stands for the Configuration Management Database. It's the central repository of all or most of the IT-related resources that you can have in your IT environment. There are some key benefits for using Service Manager as a CMDB, and that is the connectors that's been set up to other Microsoft platforms, where you can get users, groups, printers, and such on from Active Directory and Configuration Manager, as well as Virtual Machine Manager. But the main reason for getting this to get the information from the data center is actually from Operation Manager, who's one of the biggest source for not only discovering, but populating the information about the configuration items. So we were touching this a little bit before about keeping your services up to date, about how to model your services. The thing that Kevin mentioned is actually a thing that we stumble upon like every day, that people designing their services inside of Operation Manager, they threw in everything. And it goes red. Why does it go red? Yeah, because that server is not being used anymore. So one person needs to go in and update this service every time a change is being made to it. And that is a big disadvantage with the Operation Manager console, actually, with the Distributed Application Designer, that every membership of the service that you design that's going to be used inside of a Service Manager has explicit membership. This is a really time-consuming task, and, well, if you have 10 services, that wouldn't be a problem because you don't have too much changes. But if you go out to a customer and it says that, yeah, I have 600, it will probably be a full-time employee who's just going to open that console and change the service. And in the meanwhile, the service will be red, and people will not have, you know, they won't trust operations. They will not trust that it delivers the right reporting capabilities. So this is actually a good reason why we promote the LiveMaps product, because we use this to design our services that we provide to the customers with dynamic membership. You can really easily create new services inside of the authoring console with just a few clicks, a task that takes 10 times just with creating service level tracking, the views and everything, it just solves this automatically for you. And if you design your services right, you can have dynamic membership. So whenever a change, a new server or anything comes in that matches that name or expression, it will automatically update. And also with the Service Manager connector for LiveMaps Unity, all these changes are then synchronized over to Service Manager. So you get the relationships to the CI items. Another thing that we like to discuss is that if you do this solution about putting your services in focus, we can actually discover all your configuration items inside of Operation Manager. But as soon as they are part of an IT service, we enable the monitoring for them. So before that, everything is discovered. You get information about the CIs, but no alerts are being generated. No rules are being gathered. Assume that it sees that this service is part of a LiveMaps Unity group. It will enable all these features. So you don't have to worry about servers not into production. That's not part of a service generating any alerts, any performance issues in your environment.
Safer than maintenance mode.
Maintenance mode, yeah. Always.
No, safe. I was just saying that's probably safer than maintenance mode. Everything in maintenance mode or a DA with 64,000 objects in it.
Maybe that was one of the reasons why they put it in the news operation manager. So let's talk a little about the birth of a configuration item. And I already spoke that most of them are actually from Active Directory and Configuration Manager. And the rest is gathered from Operation Manager. This takes a lot of consideration when working with management pack development. So it's not only important to find what's being monitored, actually. You could have a monitoring solution that's more into to see, okay, what type of information do I want to populate my CMDB with? Also, which types of production environments is this service? Because the service could not only be the production service. It could actually be education or quality. That is actually a service that IT is bringing out to the organization as well. And you will have to work with naming conventions. This is actually one of the first things that we recommend that people start to work with, because as soon as you don't start work with naming conventions, it will be a mess in the whole IT environment. And even though they don't have those things in place, it's good to set the naming conventions, and hopefully in a couple of years, you will have better structure, both in your CMDB, in your monitoring solution, and everything. Do you agree? Structure.
Yeah.
And how many have it? Customers have any naming convention. Have a brain.
All of them.
I don't know about you guys. I find more and more customers are conscious of naming conventions in the past few years. I'm not saying everyone, you know. Yeah, there was one customer recently I was with that used a random name generator for their servers.
Yeah, but again, it depends, right? For the enterprise, you have that kind of control.
Yeah.
The service providers, you have self
service. Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it really depends.
What's really interesting is when you start talking about services, then naming conventions definitely play a much stronger role. When you talk about, you know, just the infrastructure boxes, it can be anything at that stage, random number generators. Looking at the fabric, man.
Yeah, talking about naming conventions, it's not only doing naming convention, it's also doing it right. That's one of the key things. I see a lot of customers thinking about naming conventions and then they come up with some crazy concept how they do it, and they put everything in a name. So it's like, if they have a VM, they are like putting the name in which location the VM is running, for example. And that's kind of pain. Today, we are like really dynamic and everything. We move that VM, and then it's like, oh, now we have a problem, right? And things like that happen all the time. So doing it right is also key for that.
Yeah.
It's interesting, because I came across a customer with that as well, and they stopped doing that. It was a German customer, very good, very analytical, till they started moving and becoming the hosting party that they wanted to be for services. And then they switched over to organizational units. And I was just dying to ask the question of, when are you going to run out of those? When they start keeping. So it's important to get it right, or at least, you know, go back and fix it at the worst part. Do you have any recommendations on it?
Just as a side note, I would say I was working with a customer once where it would have been easier for me to remember the IP version 6 addresses than the names. So you can definitely do this pretty bad.
So what tips would you have? Let's talk about positives then.
And then you gave me the mic.
Oops.
One of the tips could be that you actually try and work with the naming conventions in the design phase of the service.
Yeah.
And use that as a starting point.
Of course, and also standardization, right? A standard that is dynamically applicable to the changing of the modern data center, because the modern data center is always changing, right? New technology for fabric comes up and goes and brings new things to the table, right? So you need to have a naming convention that is have a dynamical approach. If you don't go, if you don't do it, you will end up, like Christian said, it's easier to remember the IPv6 address than the actual naming convention. So that's my best tip.
I think a lot of times you actually forget why you're doing it. You say that, yeah, I want naming convention because I want structure. But you always forget, okay, but what are we going to use it for? I think it's the same with ITIL processes. Okay, we need to have this, but why? So we start with incident management process and we bring all the shit in. We set all the classification tables and all the everything needs to be. So the incident analyst, they just sit and hit everything. But they have no clue actually what to do with the information. So by naming conventions, why do we need it? Yeah, because when we design the service, we use dynamic membership to save times, to ensure that we have accurate monitoring solutions and so on. So if we actually see what the purpose of, maybe it's easier to actually adapt to it. So we're going through something that I like to talk about and something that's a lot of times missed because the process support actually goes with service manager. That's the tool to use for it. And some people say that, yeah, we haven't started using event management process because, yeah, service manager doesn't support it. And that's good. But what they do, they actually forward everything generated in Operation Manager into the incident process. And they're working with every alert. So we try to recommend to start looking at the event management process because you have a lot of benefits by looking into it. Of course, it's a process. It's really hard to work with, so on. But if you just try to understand the concept of it and then make your own environment and how you would like to do it, but just look at it to see, okay, this is maybe something that's interesting because actually Operation Manager is a really good tool as the primary event management system. And I say primary because a lot of organizations have other event management systems. They might be using SolarWinds, they might be using other tools. But it's always good to have the primary event management that is responsible for collecting events to one place. And there is a lot of management pack out there for collecting very much in your data center. Some are free and some you have to pay for. And if you look at the new Operation Management Suite, or Operational Management Suite, one of the features in it is actually a really big log engine. And it was one key thing that Microsoft was missing before. So with integration to Operation Manager, we can try and see some benefits with it. There's three types of events that we need to take in consideration. We have informational events. Those are non-actionable for the moment. We don't care about it. We don't have to do anything with it right now, but we would like to use that information for later use. That could be analytical use to try to see trends in disk usage. It could be, okay, when are we hitting high CPU on servers and so on. This is stored today in Operation Manager Data Warehouse. We also have exceptions. An exception is when we have a direct failure of a service. When we have a failing configuration item that is affecting a service, this can be thrown into a different process. It could be incident, but it can also be problem and change. But for the event management team, that's usually the operations team, they don't care. They don't care what they do with it. Just throw it over to the incident management process and they will take care of it. You don't care. But you will have also warnings. Warnings is that it could affect the service or you're not sure because you see that the service goes down and you have to understand. You need to correlate. Does this have to do with anything? And this is where we also look into automation. So automation can be something that can really get out of hands because you start just automating stuff everywhere. And we try to see, okay, if we look at this process, where can we do automation tasks? And the out response is that. So if we have predefined warnings, we can create auto triggers for them. Try to reset the Windows service. Try to clear out disk space. If that fails, you can go into creating an alert. This is not an incident. It's just an alert that demands human interaction. The person responsible for this can close, you archive the data, or you move it to a different process. So for the people who's been working with Operation Manager, I'm not sure how many in here that's working with Operation Manager. A couple of them. How much time and effort do you actually put in to tune the management pack? And you export the nice management pack to Excel, and you sit down with the team, and hopefully it's not the SQL team, and you go through 500 rules and monitors, and you ask them, do you want this, do you want this, do you want this? And that is quite a time-consuming task. Instead, if you look at the decision tree, you know, this is something that the event management process owner has agreed on. You can see, okay, when this happens, where should it go? This is just for archiving. Okay. Right? This is part of a service, and it's critical for a service. Throw them into different categories, and it's much easier to actually tune the management pack for the purpose and not to let the technical team just decide they think that they want to have those things. Because I guarantee that a lot of alerts that goes into Operation Manager are alerts that some might be interested in looking into sometime. I know that we have some SQL thing about memory buffer that, you know, always shows up. But nobody actually cares about, because teams that's working with that, they want to report every week. Those types of events should be thrown and archived and work with later. And this is also when it comes to the human interaction and the correlation of events, where the dashboarding solution for Savvision is a great tool where you actually can see when a warning is being generated, is there anything else affected by this? All right, we have an issue. We have identified that this is not part of the IT service. It's a fabric, but it's actually preventing the service to work as it should be. We can then correlate that information and throw the warning over to the next process. Do you agree on that?
Should we do it together?
Well, yeah, cool. Oh,
yeah, we agree.
All right. So some of the key benefits.
There's a question.
Question, sorry.
I'm a SQL guy.
We love SQL guys.
Do you want me to get the mic to you?
I'll try not to shout another.
Save your breath.
What I do, I'm a consultant as well. What I do when I go into organizations who bring me the list of from Excel about SQL events is I try to correlate it into what processes and procedures and standards they've got. And if they don't have any, I don't even start with this stuff. Because I have procedures and processes around capacity management. I'm not going to bring a red alert for 95% full for a 10 terabyte database, because you're going to be hopefully close to 95% full on 10 terabytes. Because then you'll have other things that come in there, hopefully, which you'll be able to put some automation around to say, decide whether it's a proper alert, secondary that to see if you need to actually trigger an event or actually do some work in the background with orchestration. So I think a lot of this centers back around into the technology side rather than the operations, which is the ITIL, the processes and procedures and capacity planning and all of the stuff that makes enterprises lovely instead of the whole developer focus, which is quickly spin something out, which if you don't have the ITIL, which if you don't have all the operations stuff, you can't get that working. Because they want to trigger stuff quickly.
Yeah.
But there's none of the stuff to support it, to actually facilitate. So how does that fit into the processes and procedures and standards side, apart from the naming conventions?
Should we throw that out to the MVPs?
Well,
feel that one?
Any of you?
If you wouldn't mind sitting a bit closer next time.
So it's probably not a direct answer to your question, right? But you know, just to lean in, if we're talking about event management or alert tuning, whether it's with Ops Manager or whatever the tool is, I think you know there's not one definite way that every customer. Like personally, I'm not a fan of you know go straight in, tune the management packs as complete as you can via either Excel sheets or given different teams access to the console. And again, you know, substitute Ops Manager for whatever monitoring tool that you use. I'm not a huge fan of that. I prefer to deploy management packs, deploy the monitoring, do some basic tuning and some best practice recommendation tuning for those noisy alerts that everyone knows about, Jonas, that you mentioned. But then to put it into context from a service model and get the team, because I would expect that I've already built that model with the input from the team, and then give them some sort of role-based access control where they have a scope view of the events that pertain or that are relevant to their specific service, and then you work with them to understand what way that they're going to get those alerts and what teams are, or what members of the team are going to actually action them. But you know, there's other customers that would say, "Give me a console with 800 alerts and let me work through it, and we come back to you in a week." Like,
yeah, and this is not, you know, this is not the perfect solution that fits everybody. This is just if you don't have anything, and today you're just pushing everything into incidents. Well, maybe you can look at this. Maybe you can see, okay, but we could maybe use some part of this because something that you have to use for everything. I'm not sure if we did answer your question because I think it was a lot of questions in it, but you're free to speak with us afterwards. So we are running really out of time. I'm just going to go through some of the slides that we have. I mentioned incident management. I know that incident management, of course, is in Service Manager. It's not a great tool for incident management. It's a good tool.
Take care.
I'm just pushing Andreas here, but well, it's a tool for incident management.
It's Service Manager. Very cool.
Yeah, and the benefits you get for actually connecting your configuration items and the monitoring solutions is that when you get automatic incidents, you actually see which services are affected by the incident, when that incident are being sent from the event management process, of course, to incident process. And it's really easy for the analyst to see, okay, I got an incident, it's still active, but what's actually the status of the service? You click open, you have clear view of the current situation. The other part is the change management. We discussed that with the design issues before, that try and keep the items related to the services, and you gain great benefits when sitting down with the teams and say, okay, I need to reboot this server, I need to do a change to this asset, and add that as an affected item to the service, and then click, okay, which services is this part of? And it's really easy, and you save a lot of time. You don't have to go out and email everybody, say, all right, who's part of this service? And the last part, when you have implemented one process, it's always, okay, which process should we go to next? And then you go to release, and then you go to every other process. In a lot of cases, we see that you actually forget the most important thing, and that's to improve the existing process, improve the delivery of your IT services. And that is actually one of the really good things with ITIL, that it's so focused on you getting better. So I think we already discussed some of the main challenges, right? So short conclusion, great tools for adapting to the IT framework. You can enhance adoption with Savision Live Maps Unity. Get the right processes in place for your organization and your needs. Design your services with naming conventions for low maintenance and improve your processes for long-term results. Any more questions?
Very big thing to start with. But what is when you work with the customers with ITIL, what is your first step into it? Do you start with the design strategy and then or service strategy and then take your work?
I think that actually the most organization benefits most. I'm not sure with you, Andreas, what you think, but incident is something that's really, you know, this is where we get most value for money first. So I don't think that a lot of people or organizations start with design or strategy, right? Mm-hmm. Or what do you think?
So from process perspective, it's incident management first. It's, I think, 99% of all of our customers.
Yeah.
And we did almost 25, 30 implementation, starting with incident management. But I like the idea more, like if you start with service manager, it needs about half an hour to set up all the connectors. Doesn't matter how complex it is. So maybe it needs an hour to configure all the connectors. And after a day, maybe 2 days, you have all your IT infrastructure information inside of the service manager. So which is basically automated configuration management process. So this is also a great benefit.
Yeah. And most of the times, they actually have an organization also for incident. They have their help desk.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, for change management and problem, you need to also create the team to handle those things. So I think that's, you know. But I don't think that you should actually, because when you move on to the different processes, there is a lot of questions, you know, how do we handle this and this and this? And a lot of those questions that we actually, you know, talked about here is that some of them are actually handled in the design and the strategy. You know, what is the strategy of this service and how do we design it? So maybe start with some of the processes like incident, service request, then look into, all right, maybe we should use just some bits and pieces from the other things, then move to change them and problem, for example. But I think it's, you know, what the organizations, what they benefit from the most. I know that Justin wants to say a couple of words, and if you have any more questions, we can take them afterwards.
I'll make it quick, because I don't want to keep anyone from the last round of break. We do have a chance to win a real star in the universe. We have very cleverly stuck stars underneath your chairs, so whoever would like to look underneath their chair and have a chance to win a star for the universe, feel free. Right now, it's not for you guys. Nice try. You guys are stars already in my universe. Does that make you feel better? Are there any winners? Well, we have a man there. Sir, if you can come and see me at the end, we've got a nice little token where you can name a star. In the meantime, I'd like to thank the four lovely gentlemen in the chairs. Thank you for being on the hot seat and sharing your minds, your thoughts, some swear words, beers shortly afterwards, hopefully. If you guys would like to reach out to them, feel free to connect with them, either through us or through you guys direct on blogs. Yeah? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jonah.